Good morning. Today's daf in Sota is Chaf Vav. We're starting on Chaf Ham and Beis. I thank the massive family of West Orange, New Jersey. Sponsorship of the entire Masechta Sota. Learning that we do. Lezecha Nishmas Nechemia Ben Avraham. Here in the fourth parak, it's a short parak, and Yerush Hashem, between today and tomorrow, we're going to be finishing the parak. But in the meantime, however, today's daf, a full daf dedicated to the discussion of our Mishnah. Right, all the Mishnayos here in the fourth parak are going to be front-loaded. They were front-loaded. We went through all the Mishnayos. And now, with the Mishnayos in hand, so the Gemara now is going to have a discussion on all the points in the Mishnayos. The basic theme of the fourth parak of Sota is that in order for the kino and the steer, in order for the warning and for the seclusion to be significant, to result in drinking, so it has to be a wife. And any time there is any kind of deficiencies within the marriage, so then this doesn't serve as a kino and a steerah. Okay, I say that really is a broad description of our parak, and then, of course, a lot of details, which obviously we're doing as we go through the Gemara. First two cases of the Mishnah were, let's say, for example, Arusa and Shemar Yavam, that if there's kino and stira by your Arusa, so you went through the first stage of marriage, you're now married, Minat Torah, right? In order to terminate the marriage, it has to be a divorce, but you're not living with her yet. In other words, you have not yet arrived at the second stage of marriage. So is there kino in there? Is there stira? So the answer is... It's so funny. I'm about to say yes. I'm about to say no. It's neither. It's neither yes. It's no. It's somewhere in the middle. Meaning, as the Gemara pointed out, going back to yesterday's daf and Chav Dalid. So Kino and Stira vis-a-vis, she's going to be usher to you. In other words, if she's been talking to another man and you warned her and she secluded herself with that man, so now there is going to be Isser, yet what there's not going to be is there's not going to be Shtia. There's not going to be drinking. Okay, and the reason why is because despite the fact that you're married, you're not fully married, and the Gemara had a drasha, and okay. So the basic idea of this parak is that because the marriage has a deficiency, in the first case of the Mishnah, I'm just illustrating by example, in the first case of the Mishnah, it happens to be because it's Erusin, and it's not yet at the point of Nisuin, so now that the marriage is not a fully recognized marriage, so therefore, there are going to be limitations regarding the Kinu and Stira. In the case of Erusin, the limitations are, you're not going to the base of Mikdash and she's not drinking. So what does that mean practically? It means practically now that the marriage obviously has to come to a conclusion. Meaning because there was Kinu and because there was Stira, so now there's Isser, and the Isser is just simply going to mean now that Rachmanis, the two of you are going to have to get a divorce and that'll be the only way to conclude and resolve this particular marriage. Good. So with that stated, so now we're on Chaf Hei Amud Beis, and we are at the top of the Amud. It's a really short Amud. And so we did the Machlokes yesterday between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. So the last thing we saw yesterday was what happens where it was your wife full, it was a full wife, and Rachmanis, it was Kinu and Stira, you warned her and she secluded herself with a man, and then more Rachmanis and you died. And now, is she gonna be brought to the Beis HaMikdash to drink? The answer, of course, is no. In other words, the Torah says that the husband's gotta bring her to the Beis HaMikdash to drink, and Rachmanis, right now, there's no longer a husband. Okay, so that isn't even open for discussion. So what is open for discussion is, whether or not there's gonna be a ksuva. Is she gonna be entitled to a ksuva? That's a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says she will be entitled to a ksuva. Beis Hillel says she will not. And the Gemara yesterday gave a fundamental explanation regarding what are they arguing about, and that's kol ha'omed legavos kigavoi dami. In other words, when you're a note holder and you stand to collect an obligation, and your note now it has you having a lien on that property, is that lien on the property makes you as if you've already collected the loan, or alternatively, no. In other words, it allows you, it gives you the power. You can now exercise that lien, but it doesn't mean that you currently are holding and ownership of that property. So that's the machlokus between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, as we saw in the end of yesterday's daf. So now we're going on in the Mishnah. We're in Chav Hei Amud Beis at the two dots, two lines down from the top of the Amud. So when it comes to Mu'uberes Chaveiro, so we're not going to be focusing on that case in the Mishnah, but rather we're going on to the case of the Ilonis. Ilonis Zikena. So what did the Mishnah say in the case of Ilonis and Zikena? Machlokus between Tanayim as to whether or not, if you have an Ilonis or Zikena, someone who cannot have a child, as to whether or not there is going to be Kinu and Stira by her. So why wouldn't there be Kinu and Stira? So the Tanakhama of our Mishnah said, I'll tell you why not. because we're talking about a case where you yourself don't have children. You have the mitzvah peruvu, and what did you do? You married a woman who cannot have a child. So therefore, the chachamim do not sanction this marriage, because you did not marry a woman that will facilitate and allow you to have to fulfill the mitzvah peruvu. So according to the chachamim, what must you do? You have to terminate the marriage. So this is a marriage that needs to be terminated. So for such a marriage, it's not going to be kinu and stira. That's the shita of the chachamim. Meanwhile, Rabbi Lazar says, nah, it's okay. In other words, you married a woman, you can't have a child. So Rabbi Lazar says the solution to the problem is really simple. I say that, by the way, knowing it's not that simple, but marry a second woman. Marry a woman that can have a child. In other words, just because this woman can't have a child doesn't mean that you can't fulfill the mitzvah puravu. Sure, you can fulfill the mitzvah puravu. Just do it with a second wife. So we had a machlokas. Now, in the Mishnah, between the Tanaim, whether or not being married to a woman who currently right now cannot have a child, whether or not that's a sanctioned marriage or not a sanctioned marriage. And again, the difference would be is that whether or not there would be kinu and stira. Good. That's the Mishnah. That already is a lot of information. And the Gemara now advances the following theory. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua. So, Be'akara Zekena. So as far as the Mishnah is concerned, Machlokis, sorry, I skipped an important word. Machlokis Be'akara Zekena. Yes, the Mishnah is having a debate, but that's talking about a woman who is either an Akara or Zekena. Akara, meaning that she can't have children and that her sterility came about after you married her. Or Zekena, she's old. In other words, obviously in her youth, she was able to have a child. But now that she's older, she can't have a child. So when we're talking about Nakara, when we're talking about a Zekena, so we have a Machlokas amongst the Tanaim. Aval Ilonis Divrei Hakol, Lo Shosef Lo Not Lo Tzuvasa. But if she's an Ilonis, meaning we're talking about a woman who congenitally, from the time that she was born, is unable to have a child. She has, and this is not being a doctor, because I'm not. And this is not me diagnosing, because I don't diagnose. But we're talking about a woman who's got some sort of hormonal imbalance and just simply is unable to produce a child. Okay, she's an islandist. As we've, the islandist comes up again and again throughout the Gemara. The word islandist is describing a woman who just simply does not have the equipment to produce a child. Okay, however that came to be. Right, in other places in the Gemara gives us symptoms in terms of identifying whether or not she qualifies as an islandist. The word islandist actually comes from the word isle, right? A ram, a male. So in other words, she's a woman, but she does not have the female quality of being able to produce a child. Okay, so when it comes to an islandist, so divra koloshos v'lo notlos ksuvasa. So here now the theory goes like this. Now I'm calling it a theory. It's not a theory. It's right now an opinion in the Gemara. But it happens to be that I also, I read ahead and I know how the Gemara is going to feel about this position. But anyway, right now, without spoiling, without giving away too much. So what he's positing, he meaning Rav Nachman in the name of Rabba Baravua, is that for an islandist, there's no kinui, there's no stira that's going to result in the in shtia. And so as a result of that, if you have an islandist and there is a sota situation, you warned her and she secluded herself. So now it's just going to result in Isser with no solution. We're not going to go to the base mikdash. She's not going to drink water. And obviously she's going to be forfeiting her ksuva based on her behavior. Why not? Why is she not going to drink the water? Shenemer v'niktav v'nizra zera. So, Misha darka lazria. Yatsazu shein darka lazria. So really interesting explanation in terms of why. And that is because we know when the sota goes to the base of mikdash, she drinks the water, there are going to be two eventualities. And what now the Gemara is positing is you have to be on either side of that eventuality. Number one, she committed adultery, which in fact, if she did, so she's going to blow up. Number two is she didn't commit adultery. And if that's the case, she's going to have a child. So what Rav Nachman is arguing is that this woman over here, since she physically cannot have a child because she's an islandist, so therefore she cannot stand on one side of the equation. Therefore, she can't stand on the other side of the equation as well. She's not eligible for testing because since she can't have a child, so therefore she doesn't, the test is not going to prove anything for her on the other side of that as well. That's a really interesting theory. And the Gemara now is going to challenge and really push back on this theory. Meitzvei, the Gemara now is going to be challenging based on a Braisa. Okay, now this Braisa we're about to start over here is long. And the truth of the matter is that for our purposes right now, we only want one point of the Braisa. So this is a standard format of the Gemara. In other words, so now we're about to engage in a long braisa, because really we want to extract one point. And obviously, as we go through the Braisa, I'll explain every aspect of the Braisa, and we'll go through it quickly, again, a little too quickly. And then obviously I'm going to highlight exactly which point. The Gemara is going to highlight exactly which point we want to see over here, which is going to basically inform us that Rav Nachman's position is not an accepted position. And then afterwards, after we do that, so step number one, we're going to quote the Braisa. Step number two, we're going to reject Rav Nachman. And then step number three, as long as we quoted this long Braisa, we're going to go back to a couple of points in the Braisa. And that'll take up a good part of today's daf. So Meisvei, so here we begin. So a person issues a warning to his arusa, to a shemeres yavam. So let's say now, before you get to the second stage of marriage, she decides that she's going to be soser. She will seclude herself with that man that you warned her not to be with. And this is during eris, and this is during shemeres yavam. So we all know, by the way, in other words, we already spent, that's our Mishnah. So we already know what's going to be. But we continue. We're on the top of Chavav Amin Aleph. And Mu'uberes Chaver, Manikas Chaver, Lo Shosos. And on top of that, furthermore, so if you married Mu'uberes Chavero, right? She was impregnated by another man, and that marriage terminated. Doesn't matter whether it's death or divorce. That marriage terminated, and you married her while she was pregnant. Alternatively, you married a woman while she was nursing, meaning she was impregnated, and she had a child through another man, and that marriage terminated, and you married her with a very young baby. So any baby that's under 24 months of age. So now under these circumstances, those are marriages that are not sanctioned marriage. You shouldn't have married a pregnant woman, and you should not have married a woman who's nursing. And as we already discussed numerous times throughout Seder Nashim, I'll just remind everybody, the reason why you shouldn't marry her is because the Chachamim were concerned about the welfare of the baby, either the in utero baby or the baby that was just born. In other words, you marry that woman is going to be neglectful of her baby and prefer her new husband over the baby, right? Obviously, I need more explanation, but right now, for our purposes right now, that's enough information. So the Chachamim said that you shouldn't marry her. And if you did, it is now a rabbinically non-sanctioned marriage. And therefore, lo shosos, velo no lo ksuvos divrei Rabbi Meir. So because the marriage is not sanctioned, so in the event of kinu and stira, so she's not going to be drinking. Shaya Rabbi Meir Omer lo yisa adam mubez chaver minekes chaver v'im nasa yotzi v'lo yachzer olamis. And according to Shitas Rabbi Meir says that you marry a pregnant woman or a woman who just had a baby. So it's such a non-sanctioned marriage that the chachamim were kone. They offered the following punitive fine. And that is that because you married somebody you shouldn't have married, A, you're going to have to divorce her, and B, you can't remarry her later on. Under normal circumstances, sure, you can remarry a woman you divorce, provided, of course, that she didn't marry anyone in the interim. But in other words, you can go ahead and divorce her now and marry her later. In other words, what you could have easily have done is just waited, and so you didn't wait, so you married her early, prematurely. But according to Rav Meir, the Chachamim were so unhappy with you, you have to divorce her with no option of ever marrying her again. And according to the Chachamim, no. Meaning that what the Chachamim will tell you is that you married a woman pregnant or nursing, so you divorce her, and then you wait the requisite 24 months post-nursing, and now you can go ahead and you can marry her again. So according to the Chachamim, in other words, what you did was wrong, but it's not permanent, it's only a temporary ban now. What you'll do is you divorce her, and then you'll wait the requisite time and you remarry her. And according to the Chachamim, that would mean now that because the sanctioning over here is not nearly as definitive as Rav Meir, so according to the Chachamim, if you marry Mu'uberes Chavero, Minekes Chavero, so there is an option to drink. Okay, anyway, that is all point number one of the Braisa. And we continue. Remember, it's a long Braisa. So let's say you have a young man, and he decides that he's going to be marrying either an akara, a woman who is sterile, or a zekena, or she's old. Old meaning she already hit menopause, and she's not going to be able to have a child. So, lo shosva lo no, lo ksuva. So according to the Tanakama, so she's not drinking, and she's not going to be collecting her ksuva. Meaning in the event of a charged infidelity, where there was warning, there was kinu and stira, so now there's not going to be an option to drink, and lo ksuva, and she's not going to be collecting her ksuva. Why not? meaning because according to the Chachamim, so you shouldn't have married her. You have a mitzvah peruvu, and you married a woman who can't have a child. So you shouldn't have done that. And therefore, it's a non-sanctioned marriage, and therefore, it doesn't result in shtia. Rebbe Lazar Omer Yachol Hulisa Acheres V'lifos V'lirbos Emenu. And according to Rebbe Lazar, so what you'll do is that you'll just simply marry a second wife. And so therefore, this is not a non-sanctioned marriage. It's a fine marriage. Okay, again, the appropriateness of a young man marrying an older woman, meaning right, a woman who already hit menopause, the appropriateness of that is open for discussion, but according to the Chachamim, as far as Peruvu is concerned, you could still fulfill the mitzvah of Peruvu. Ava mekana la rusa so ula shomer yavim shelo mishikansa nistera. So, however, the Brisa continues is that let's say it is your arusa, your shomer yavim, you did issue a warning, and then after the warning mishikinsa nistera, then you went into the second stage of marriage. And now afterwards, there's stira, oh, show, so, oh, no, look, suvasa. So now we go back to the regular rule of either you drink or you forfeit your ksuva, one or the other. Muber, so menikis atzma, oh, show, so, oh, no, oh, lo, no, los ksuva. Now, if it's muber, so menikis atzma, meaning she's pregnant because of you, the husband, or she's nursing because of you, the husband, and now, kinu evistira. So this is a normal case, meaning this is a perfectly, I was about to say healthy marriage. Far, far from a healthy marriage where there's kinu and stira, but meaning the marriage is good enough where it qualifies for kinu and stira, and ultimately shisiyah. And the braisa goes on. We're not done yet. So Ravi Shanasa Karo Zakena, Vishlo Isho Vanim. So let's say you have a young man who's married too. Either he marries a woman who's sterile or he marries a woman that's too old. However, the contrast over here is he already has children. So now that he already has children and he already fulfilled his mitzvah puravu, so as far as this marriage is concerned, it's perfectly fine. Now, the Chachamim would have no problem with this marriage whatsoever. Again, I say no problem. Okay, in other words, the social dynamics, but leave that aside. Halachically, it's perfectly fine. In other words, you have a mitzvah puravu, you fulfilled the mitzvah puravu. You had a pair of kids, a boy and a girl. So now, so now we're in a standard situation of In the event of kinu and stira, so now either she drinks or she is going to forfeit her ksuva. Aishas mamzer la mamzer aishas nasin la nasin aishas ger. The evim mishukhar va'ailanis. So show so lo no ksuva. So you have the wife of a mamzer, and we're describing somebody that he's allowed to marry. Meaning the mamzer is married to a mamzeris, a perfectly legitimate marriage. Right, the fourth parak of Kedushin, we're going to go over exactly who can marry whom. So but over here, mamzer marries a mamzeris, and again, unfortunately, kinu and stira. He warns her; she secludes under those circumstances. So again, now we're in standard, we're in regular halachic territory, which is either you drink or you forfeit your ksuva, one or the other. Okay, adkan, that takes us to the end of the braisa. Okay, so that was a lot. Like I forecasted. So we went through a long brisa, and meanwhile, Ketani Mias, Islandis. So one of the examples that was given in the brisa is an Islandis. So and the brisa says that the Islandis is going to be like a Nakara, like a Zakena. So Tiyufta de Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, okay, so it's clear from the brisa that this thesis of Rav Nachman is just simply a rejected thesis. So, and it's a refutation of the position of Rav Nachman. Again, just to review, according to Rav Nachman, so when a man marries an islandist and, kinu and stira, so Rav Nachman says she can't drink. Why not? Because there has to be, by the sota, there are only two outcomes. Either she was metame, she was not metame. If she's metame, she expires. If she's not metame, she will have a child. So since the islandist can't have a child, so therefore, since she can't come out one side of the litmus test of Mesota, so therefore the other side is also not going to work as well. Okay, that's the thesis of Rav Nachman. The Gemara says, yeah, but the Braisa clearly is a rejection of that because the Braisa is telling us that the islandness is just like the Akara and Zakena. Okay, so so Amlecha Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman, in his defense, will tell you the following Tanaihi. Okay, I'm very, very good. So you quoted a Braisa that doesn't stand by my viewpoint. Okay, good. And what I will tell you is that's one braisa. I have another braisa. So, Vana Damriki, I tan, the tan, Rabbi Shimon Ben Elazar Omer. So island is lo shosav lo no los ksuva. The according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the islandess is not going to be drinking, and because of her behavior, in other words, she put herself in a position where she spoke to a man, warned by her husband, secluded herself with that man. So now that's going to be a forfeiture of her ksuva, and drinking is simply not going to be an option. Shenamar v'nikta v'nizra zera. So Misha Darka Lazria, yes, Azu Shane Darka Lazria. Okay, so here in this brisa, clearly Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is now fully in on board with the opinion of Rav Nachman. V'rabanan hai v'nikta v'nizra zera my avdile. So the Gemara says, okay, so now that we know that's a machlokas tanayim, so this position of Rav Nachman is in fact defensible. I could defend it by simply pointing out it's a machlokas tanayim. We started off our daf today by quoting one brisa that is not on board with his viewpoint, but then we just quoted a brisa that is on board. And the Gemara now goes over the classic. If I don't agree with Rav Shimon ben Elazar, which obviously there is a school of thought that does not agree with Rav Shimon ben Elazar, so then what do you do with Vinikta Vinizra Zera? So Shim Isa Akara Nivkeres Div Rabbi Kiva Amala Rabbi Shmuel Im Kain Yisru Kol Akaros Vizu Halvel Nistra Yivsida Im Kain Matam Alamer Vinikta Vinizra Zera Shim Isa Yolas Pitzar You'll let us be Revach, Nekevas, you'll let us Zecharim, Kitzarim, you'll let us Arukim, and Shcharim, you'll let us Levanim. So the Gemara brings down that if I don't agree with Rav Shimon ben Elazar, so what it means is that Vinikta Vinizra Zer is telling us something else. What else is it coming to tell us? So we had it with the Gemara just brought down. I read it really quickly. A machlok is between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. According to Rabbi Akiva, so you know what Vinikta Vinizra Zer tells me? It tells me that for a woman who is unable to have a child, and then she went through the soto ordeal, so now she's going to have a child. She will have the ability, the capability of having a child. So that she says Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Yishmael says to Rabbi Akiva, that's a terrible idea to put out there. It's a terrible idea. Why? Because you have a woman who, Rachmanis, is struggling to have a child. So her solution now is going to be, hey, I got this great idea. I'll just spend too much time with another man. I'll get my husband jealous. He'll warn me. I'll seclude, and you beat me to it. But yes, my head is going there, and I'll seclude myself with that man, and I'll have a child with that man. And I won't have a child with that man. Boy, do I take that back. And I'm not gonna. In other words, I'll seclude myself with that man, and I'm not gonna be with that man. And now we'll go to the base of Mikdash, and I'll drink and. And now you're basically, Rabbi Shmuel says to Rabbi Akiva, you're really planting a bad idea in a woman who's struggling to have a child, and in her desperation to have a child, she's going to come to doing something like this. Now, what Ben pointed out, which thought the same thing as well, and that is that's just like Chana, meaning we know that Chana, when she davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a child, so she threatened Hashem. Right, where's the Gemara? Gemara's in Brachos. I need to remember these things. Anyway, so she threatened HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and she said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, either you're going to give me a child, alternatively, I'm going to go the Kinu and Stira route. So she didn't do it, but she threatened HaKadosh Baruch Hu with such a threat. And Rabbi Shmuel says to Rabbi Akiva, and look, in other words, and we don't want that. And I guess it only begs the question, meaning when Chana threatened HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is she holding like Rabbi Akiva? I mean, she's not holding like Rabbi Yishmael. Okay, I don't know. I'm not going to know the answer to that question. But anyway, Rabbi Yishmael is of the position that no, that what the Vinikta V'nizra Zera is coming to teach me is that no, it's not going to be able to give a woman the ability to have a child, a woman who cannot have a child for whatever reason. But what it will do, however, is that it'll improve the child that she has, and various improvements that he describes over here, both in the delivery of the child or the actual child themselves.
If you don't make them drink, then there's no ramifications. So the old women and the barren women could therefore think that they could do it, and there's no penalty.
So again, of course, there's going to be a penalty. In other words, there's no death penalty. But in other words, it's going to result in this, and result in the forfeiture of Iksuva. That's a lot of penalty. That already is a lot. Okay. So So Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Rav Nachman Sugya. And now, so to wrap up basically the first half of today's daf, I know we're not all the way through the first half, but to wrap it up now, so basically Rav Nachman said that when it comes to an islandess, she's not drinking. Meaning the marriage with an islandess is a perfectly fine marriage. Again, there's the Peru Urivu issue, which I'm not ignoring, But the marriage itself is a fine marriage. It's just a question now, is the islandess ever going to drink? And Rav Nachman's asserting, no, she's not going to drink. Why not? Because she, since she can't land on one side of the eventuality, so therefore the test altogether is not going to work for her. That's Rav Nachman's hypothesis. And the Gemara says, it really comes down, it's a machlokas tanaim. Okay, that's what comes out after the totality of the Amud Aleph of today's daf. In doing so, so we went through a lengthy brisa, and so you know what the Gemara is going to do. It's not going to miss the opportunity. So there were a couple of points in the brisa that the brisa made that the Gemara would like to just spend a little bit of time with. So let's go. Eishes mamzer lamamzer, we are on chavav Amud Aleph. We're 2/3 of the way down at the two dots. So eishes mamzer lamamzer. So you have a woman married to a mamzer. And again, this is a sanctioned marriage. Let's say, for example, she's a mamzeris. Mamzeris is perfectly allowed to be married to a mamzer, right? Now, I'm going to get to a very, very heavy question, which I don't know the answer to, but first let's read the Gemara. So, pshita ma'u detei ma'afush e'psulam lo leifush. So, kamash malan. The Gemara says, well, why not? Meaning, if a mamzeris is perfectly allowed to marry a mamzer, which she is, so then why wouldn't we she be eligible for kinu istira and shtia? In other words, why wouldn't she drink the mesota? So the Gemara says, because I would entertain the following havamina, which is the proliferation of mamzerus. Meaning, I might have thought that we don't want mamzerim to proliferate. Because what happens when the mamzer marries the mamzerus? I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to have children. Right. Little mamzerim are going to be running around. And I might have thought that we don't want that, and therefore we should not encourage the shtia. Because remember, in the event of innocence, so then that means that she's going to produce a child. And now, what are we going to do? We're proliferating. Do we want to proliferate mamzerim? The havamina of the Gemara is that no, we don't. And that's a havamina. And then the Kamash Malan is no, yes, we do. And it leads to really a very fundamental question, which of course I don't know the answer to. And that is that what is the general attitude of the Torah when you have a mamzer? Meaning the mamzer can't marry most of the Jewish women, but is allowed to marry a good percentage, not majority. It's a minority. But a percentage of the Jewish women he's allowed to marry. But whoever he's allowed to marry, if and when they produce children, so those children are going to be a mamzerim. And is the Torah, obviously the Torah allows for it. Does the Torah encourage it? Does the Torah want that? Does the Torah want him to fulfill the mitzvah peru revu? Right? Again, that's a really heavy question. And I'm sure it's discussed, right? If I remember correctly, the Mincha Chinuch in the very beginning, I don't remember, this part I do remember correctly. The Mincha Chinuch, when he discusses the mitzvah peruvu, does in fact discuss this very question. Okay, it's a big question, which, again, I'm raising it, but we're moving on in the Gemara. Eishes ger ve'evin meshuchar ve'ailanis. So you have the wife of a ger and evin meshuchar, an ailanis. So pshita. The eishes ger, of course she's going to drink. Ma'u detema daber al b'nei Yisrael. Velo gerim, so kamash malan. So I might have thought that the parsha of Sota is only for somebody who is born into the faith and not somebody who joins the faith. The parsha of Sota opens up with the words daberel b'nei Yisrael. So as a havamina, the Gemara just for a moment entertained the idea that maybe the ger is excluded from the parsha of Sota. And again, what in the havamina, what the Gemara is proposing is, of course, her infidelity is infidelity, and of course it creates iser. But in other words, there's no option for drinking. That's the havamina. So the chiddush is no ve'ema achinami. So ve'amarti ribuyeh. The Gemara says, yeah, you know what? It's not a terrible havamina. The Torah does open up with the words b'nei Yisrael. So the Gemara says, yeah, I know that. But at the same time, however, it says ve'amarta. Remember, the ve'amarta aleim is a ribuy that we did in the beginning of this perek, and we just made the same point again. Eishes kohen shows that pshita. The Gemara says, now the wife of a kohen is going to drink. Now the Gemara says, of course, meaning she's married to a Kohen, and again, there was a jealousy, warning, and seclusion. And so now, under those circumstances, she's married to a Kohen, so what are we going to do under those circumstances? We go to the base of Mikdash and she drinks. And the Gemara says, and, I think we all would have known that, the Braisa has to spell that out, because I might have thought differently. What else would I have thought? So, ma'udetema vihilo nispasa. Asura nispasa muteres, hol vizu, hol vinispasa asura, em lotishta kamashmalan. So the Gemara says, because the Havamina would have been like this. I would have thought that the wife of a Kohen fits into a different category and categorically does not belong in Sota. Why not? Because we know, Rachman, as we go over this halacha numerous times throughout the Gemara, and that is that an Ashes Kohen, if let's say she is violated, she's an one, she's an anusa, and she's violated, she's also to her husband. In other words, the Torah gives her the status of being a zona. Kohen is not allowed to be married to a zona. And of course, it's a difficult halacha because it's not her fault. She was violated. But still, the Torah gives her the status of being a zona, and therefore she can't be with her husband. Okay. And so I might have thought that the Parsha of Sota would, even though she willingly had relations with another man, which is more than being a zona, in other words, she's an OFS. It's a zona, but, you know, on steroids, if you will. She's an OFS. But still, I might have thought that under those circumstances, since she is categorically different than that of an Eishes Yisrael, so maybe she doesn't belong in the Parsha of Zona. Okay, that's the Havamina. But of course, the Maskana is no. In other words, she's eligible for Shtia. So the Gemara says that the Eishes Kohen now, if in fact she drinks the water and she's fine, so she can go back to her husband. The Gemara says, of course, what else would I have thought? And the Gemara's suggestion right now is Misnavna, where after she starts drinking, she starts deteriorating. So the Gemara says, Misnavna, habatku amaya. So the Gemara says, well, now wait one second. In other words, if she's starting to deteriorate, so don't we all know now that means she's guilty? So Eishes Kohen, Eishes Yisrael, doesn't matter. If you're seeing immediate deterioration, so you now know that she's guilty. She didn't die immediately. We go back to a discussion that we had a couple days ago. Zechuyos. She has zechuyos, which is putting a delay in it, but she knows she's guilty. She's starting to deteriorate. So the Gemara says, Misnavda derech evarim. So the Gemara says, okay, her deterioration is not looking like your regular sota deterioration. That's a funny sentence. As if we all know what the regular deterioration of a sota looks like. But let's right now pretend like we do. What is the regular deterioration of a sota going to look like? So it's going to look like this. She just drank the water. She was in fact guilty. And now what's going to happen is that we're going to see deterioration. She'll be symptomatic immediately, and it'll be her stomach. It'll be her thighs. Over here, however, this Eishes Kohen now is showing other symptoms. So this is your non-standard symptoms of drinking the water. And it's Eivarim. Now, exactly what that means, I'm not so sure. In other words, her limb, I read the Rashi, I'm, you know, obviously I'm saying over the Rashi, but her limbs are heavy, right? Her head and her limbs are heavy. Okay, exactly what that means, I don't know. What I know is that this is not typical symptoms. Typical symptoms of Nisnavna is that it's in the belly area, it's in the thigh area. Over here, this is not typical symptoms. So now, it's confusing, right? She drank the water, and she is symptomatic, but it's atypical. So that definitely is confusing. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says that, I might have entertained the following thought. Well, it's not typical symptoms. Okay, she didn't commit adultery. Yeah, but it is atypical symptoms. Heavy head, heavy limbs. Oh, you know what? Maybe what happened was is that she was violated. Now, again, for an Eishes Yisrael, she's still mutter to her husband. But for the Eishes Kohen, she's usher to her husband. And so maybe the atypical symptoms is indicative of the fact that maybe she was violated. Maybe that's the right conclusion in Kamash Malan. And the Bryce is there to tell us, no, that's not the right conclusion. Meaning when it comes to the Sota, and her reaction to the drinking of the water, it's binary. Either she's regularly symptomatic, meaning that you're going to see her deteriorating in the stomach area, in the thigh area. Alternatively, anything else is just simply not a function, not a symptom of her committing adultery. Period. That's the chiddush of the Braisa. Eishes Rishos, the wife of Estris is going to be Shosa. So she's married to a man who's not sterile.
Uh-huh. Huh? Sterile.
She's married to a man who is sterile. Thank you. Perfect. Okay. What's it called? Thank you. That was good playback for me. So the so kamash malan, and the havamina would have been that the kinu and stira only works when she's having relations with another man. Meaning that other man that she's having relations with is a typically sterile individual. So what would qualify for her to be a sota that qualifies her to drink is going to be where her original husband is also somebody who is a typical ish, meaning who is able to impregnate her. And so the havamina would have been is that mi baladei ishech, aside from your husband, would come and teach us that the husband himself has to be in a position of sterility in order for her being with another man as a qualification of being an act of infidelity. Now, again, I want to reiterate, because this is a really important point, and that is that not for a moment is the Gemara entertaining, well, if her husband's not sterile, so then when she's with another man, that's not an act of adultery. Of course it's an act of adultery. Meaning once she is a married woman, relations with another man, it was an act of adultery. The Gemara not for a moment is entertaining otherwise. All we're doing now is just wants to know, does she qualify in the parsha of sota to be able to drink? That's the only discussion we're having. I don't want to underscore how important a point that is, because of course it's an act of adultery. It's just a question of whether or not she qualifies for drinking.
And that's going back to before, where now they'll be able to have a child if she's innocent?
Yeah, they're right, correct. In other words, and then we go back to the Rav Nachman of the beginning of today's daf, meaning that, right, she can't land on one side of the of the litmus test. Meaning, if she was innocent, now she'll have a child. She can't have a child. Her husband's not sterile.
But it says she does drink.
Yeah. Right. So, right. That's an excellent point. Meaning, this brisa that we just learned is only going to be in accordance with one school of thought. Okay, it's a really good point. So, ayude kol arayis mekanim pshita. We're now in the very bottom of chavav amud aleph, and we made the turn to the amud beis ma'u detema. So the, I'm sorry, before we get to the Ma'od Tema, what might I have thought? Before we get to the what might I have thought, so you can be Mekane Aidea Arayos, meaning that, okay, and I know this is dysfunctional, I'm aware of that, but let's say she's spending too much time with her father, too much private time with her father, and you warn her and you say, you know, that's way too much time with your father. Now, the father, obviously, is somebody who she already is usher with, meaning that already was an erva well before you came into the picture. But in other words, but that will also serve as a kinui. And then post kinu, if she secludes herself with her father, which again, under normal circumstances, she's allowed to be alone with her father. Yichud with your father, or daughter, father, there's a heter yichud. But once there's a kinu, and once there's a stira, now she's a sota. And now she's eligible to drink the water. So the Gemara says, ma'u detema, now here, easily one could have thought like this. So nitma shtei pa'amim, echla ba'al ve'echla ba'al. So we are going to see this in tomorrow's daf, right? I keep promoting this daf because it's really a critical point in the world of sota, is that when a woman is a sota, she's usher now to two men. She's usher to her husband and she's going to be usher to the baal. Now, while she's currently married, that goes without saying, that's a no-brainer. But in other words, after this marriage terminates, she then cannot marry the baal. If she does so, she's living in sin, but in other words, but she's going to be usher to the baal. So now this halacha of echela baal v'echela baal. So, the Gemara says like this, but over here, the halach of echel abal, echel abal, is that going to work for her father? Of course it's not going to work for the father. In other words, it's not going to create an isser for the father, because the isser with her and her father already existed. So one might have thought and contemplated as a havamina. It's a really good havamina. That if the result of sota is echel abal, echel abal, but over here by the daughter and her father, there already was a pre-existing Isser, so now the Sota cannot create the double Isser of Echel Abal v'Echel Abal, and so therefore I might have thought that if it doesn't create the double Isser of Echel Abal, Echel Abal, maybe she is Mufka, maybe she is removed from the Parsha of Sota, vis-a-vis her ability to drink. Okay, Kamash Malan, that's a Chiddush. Chutz min ha-Katan, Isha Marachmana v'lo Katan. So, and now, who else is excluded from the Parsha of Sota? Katan. Meaning that, and again, I know this is dysfunctional, but let's say she's spending way too much time with a minor boy. So, and he warns her, and she defies the warning, and she secludes herself with that boy. So is she eligible for drinking? So no. Okay, now, we say boy. So here we get to a machlokus. It's really a basic machlokus amongst the Rishonim. What are we talking about when we say boy? Because again, when we're talking about a boy, so here's what we know. Right? We know that a boy below the age of bar mitzvah is not chayv in mitzvahs of the Torah. However, physical maturation for the act of bia already starts at 9 years of age. Okay? the right indelicate discussion, but it doesn't matter. In other words, as far as the Torah is concerned, so a boy 9 years and above, even though not responsible for his actions, his act of bia, as far as the Torah is concerned, qualifies as an act of bia. Meaning that if a woman is sleeping with a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, and I understand this is dysfunctional talk, but this is the halacha. If a woman is sleeping with such a young, right, whatever, I was going to say young man. It's not a young man, right? But halachically, he's a man. Physiologically, physically, he's a man. That's an act of znus. It's an act of znus. Now, in terms of, let's say, for example, it's not sota, meaning, not sota suffic, meaning there were witnesses who saw it, warned her, so forth and so on. She is going to be executed. She'll be put to death. And as far as the 10-year-old is concerned, he's not going to be put to death. Because even though his bia is an act of bia, but in other words, he's not yet a bar onshin. He's not subject to punishment. He's under bar mitzvah. Ah. Okay. So far, so good. Those are the basics. Now, the Gemara says is that we're excluding the parsha of sota from a katan. Why? Because the pasuk says ish. So when we say we're excluding a katan, are we excluding a boy below 13 or are we excluding a boy below 9? Everyone understand? In other words, the exclusion is going to which child are we talking about? And if you can imagine, you don't have to. It's machlokas. Machlokas to Rishonim. For more on this particular topic, it's a really interesting topic. So you can see the Tosfos on the top of the Amud over here who discusses it, and you can see the Rambam. And what you will see after seeing the Tosfos and seeing the Rambam is in the first parak of Sota. So you'll note that they don't agree with each other, and then there's a question of understanding the machlokas, explaining the machlokas. Okay, there is obviously much more to go over here. We're going to go on. I'd like to finish it off, but that's a lot in that one line of Gemara. And She'eino Ish. And finally, last topic for today, and that is that the Braisa told us. Now we're going all the way back. Sorry, this is no longer the Braisa. We head back to the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we learned that a warning on a katan and a warning on an eino Ish, on a non-human, so these do not qualify as warnings. Okay? In other words, it won't result in shtia. Now, lemu'utemai, so this last case of somebody who is not an ish, what does that mean? So I think when we read the Mishnah, I already spoiled it, and I already told you what the Mishnah is referring to. But now as we're in the Gemara, so we're going to go the steps of the Gemara, because the Gemara right now, before getting to the conclusion of what it actually means, so the Gemara now is going to entertain a couple of thoughts. Number one, lemu'utemai, ilema lemu'utemai shachuf, maybe it's coming to include a shachuf. Now, a shachuf is a little bit difficult to describe. But a shachuf basically is a man who is very flaccid. Rashi writes over here, Ishamar Rachman, I'm sorry, shachuf, shebesar nishchav v'kalav v'yavesh v'ein bo kawach. Okay, he has no vigor. Okay, I know it needs more description, but and Rashi goes on, but whatever. So mekanan al yado, so the, so I'm sorry.
Are you talking about impotence or?
That would be a thris. Yeah, impotence is a thris. So we're talking about somebody who just really has no vigor. And again, I know, I'm not giving a good description. I totally get it. But, v'hamar shvul, shachuf mekanan al yado, and posel b'truma. So, but meanwhile, the Gemara says, but it's not true. Meaning that there is kinui, there is tira. The woman has relations with a shachuf, and she was somebody who was qualified to eat truma, no longer. In other words, it posels her. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, so it can't be a shachuf because it's just simply not true. Shmuel tells us unequivocally that a woman sleeps with a shachuf, that is an act of bia. So the Gemara says, the mekanan yaldo pshita ma'u detema v'shachav isho sashich v'zera machmana v'hala barachihu kamash malan. So the Gemara says, well, I might have thought that when it comes to the shachuf, he is not somebody who is mazriya, right? Shich v'zera. And so in other words, he just simply does not have the physical strength to actualize the act of intimacy. Anyway, it doesn't matter. In other words, it's an act of bia. So uposa b'chum pshita ma'udat tema v'lo yichalal zara marchmana. So di'islei zera lechalal, de'leislei zera lo yichalal. So again, the havamina is that who makes her a chalala? Only somebody that can impregnate her, shachuf can impregnate her, kamash malan, it doesn't matter. In other words, the act of bia, as long as the shachuf had penetration, it's an act of bia. Okay, I know these are indelicate discussions, but that's fine. I mean, we're talking about infidelity. So we're going to have these indelicate discussions. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we're back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that kinui is not qualified when he's an eino ish. So what's the eino ish? For a moment, we proposed a man that doesn't have vigor. No, that's not excluded. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's a guy. The Gemara says, no, it's not, the Mishnah's not talking about a guy. Rav Hamnuna says very clearly that when it comes to an Ovid Kochavim Kinui, in other words, there is Kinui by the Ovid Kochavim. And on top of that, post a Truma, and he disqualifies the Truma. A woman has relations with an Ovid Kochavim, that will disqualify her, that will give her the status of being a Zona. Excuse me, disqualifying her from eating chuma.
Is it considered a bia, though?
Huh?
Is it considered a bia?
Yeah, that's exactly the point. So mekana al yado pshita ma'ahu detema nitma nitma shtei panim echel abav echel abawal. So hecha deka mitzra b'haz nos avaha ho v'asura v'kayma emalo kamash malan. And again, when let's say her infidelity is at least alleged to be with a non-Jew, why would I have thought that that's not a sota qualifier? So again, the Gemara says, the second time today we're entertaining a havamina. And that is that look, in other words, sota results a double iser to her husband and to the bawal. It happens to be that this particular bawal is somebody that she's already usher to. So I might have thought it may not have triggered the sota parsha. Kamash malan, the chiddush is no, it does trigger the sota parsha. So in other words, it does qualify as a kinui and does qualify as a stira. Uposa b'truma pshita ma'o detema uvaskon kisiya lish zar amrachmana de bar havaya and alav bar havaya lo. So kamash malan de pasol. So I might have thought that the only thing that will pasol a bas kohen is somebody who is a bar havaya, somebody who can affect kiddushin. A goy cannot affect kiddushin. In other words, marriage is not in the parsha of marriage. So I might have thought that it's not going to disqualify her. So the chiddush is that the goy does disqualify her. And umid the Rabbi Yochanan. How do I know that? We know because of a statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Minayin lo v'kocham ve'evet shabal al ha-kohenes v'al ha-viyah v'al bas Yisrael shepaslua. Will disqualify a woman from eating shumash. And Amar uvaskon kisiyah amana ugrusha. Mishi yesh lo amanas v'gerishim ba. Yatsu v'kocham ve'evet she'en lo amanas v'gerishim ba. So there's no tfisas kedushin. So and as a result of that, if a woman has relations with a guy, it disqualifies her from truma. Okay, see Rashi over here. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Yevamos. There's a lot more to explain regarding this drasha, but for our purposes right now, it's a tangential point. So we're gonna stay on board in terms of our Gemara. So our Mishnah told us that there's no kinui with an eno ish, somebody who's not a man. What does that eno ish mean? So we have just now presented two possibilities and rejected both possibilities. One, a man who doesn't have vigor. Rejected. Number two, a guy. Also rejected. Both of those are in the Parsha of Sota. Would result in kinu in stira and her drinking the mesota. So ve'ela mai, ela lamute mai, amara papa lamute behema, de'ein znos behema. The Gemara says that what the exclusion over here is towards an animal. In other words, he warns her, and I know this is dysfunctional, obviously. But in other words, he warns her not to be with a particular animal, and she's with that particular animal. And so, kinu and stira, and she's going to drink, right? That's what the Mishnah is telling us. No, she's not going to drink. Because that doesn't qualify as an act of znus. Now, to be clear, let's say it as clearly as possible. It is an act of bestiality. It will result in the death penalty. Witnesses see her doing it and warn her not to do it. So she will be put to death. Animals also going to be put to death as well. That's not on the table for discussion. That's not what we're talking about over here. What we're talking about is whether or not it fits into the Parsha of Sota. The husband's telling her not to seclude. She does seclude. She was warned not to be with that animal, and she was with that animal. And is that an act of zinus? That's what the Mishnah is telling us. It's not. That's a fair question. It just happens to be that right now we're just going to sit on the Gemara's point, but the question is fair. It just happens to be the Gemara does not discuss. So Amalei Rava mi Parzakula Ravashi Minaha Milsadam Minaha Milsadam Rabbanan Ein Znus Bebehema. In other words, the act of relations with an animal is not znus. And then when we say znus over here, we're talking about a legal status. In other words, it does not make her a zona. So dichsiv lo savi esnan zona mechir kelev vitanya esnan kelev mechir zona mutarin shenemer gam shneim shneim v'lo arba. And over here, various exchanges the Torah prohibits as a carbon. So, for example, let's go over two exchanges that the Torah prohibits. One is Esnan Zona, which means that if you have a prostitute and what is she exchanging her services for? An animal. Okay. And Yehuda and Tamar, that's exactly how that exchange went. In other words, it happens to be that he didn't have the animal that he told her he was going to have, and he gave her collateral. But anyway, the exchange was services for animal. Now when Arzona goes to the Beis HaMikdash and she says, okay, I'd like to offer this as a carbon. Okay, a couple follow-up questions. How did you get the carbon? So she's honest. She's perfectly honest. Look, here's my line of work. I'm a Zona. Okay, it's Rachmanis. That's the profession I'm in right now. And this I got through my earnings. So the Torah says that the Eslan Zona, the exchange of an animal for services rendered, is pasul, can't be brought as a carbon. Okay, now that's Eslan Zona. Mechir Kalev. Mechir Kalev is going to be a little bit difficult for you and I to understand. The Eslan Zona, it's so intuitive, meaning you can understand why the Beis HaMikdash does not want that animal to be brought as a carbon. Right? And, right, is a wonderful gesture on her part that she wants to bring it as a carbon. But on the other hand, I, at least I'm speaking for myself, I can totally understand why the Beis HaMikdash and Akash Baruch Hu is basically saying, no, we don't want to promote that kind of activity. Mechir Kelev, this one's going to be a little bit stranger. What's Mechir Kelev? Mechir Kelev is basically, I swapped a dog for an animal, meaning for a carbon eligible animal. Okay, so here I'm going to exchange a dog for a sheep, and now I go to the Beis HaMikdash and I want to bring the sheep as a carbon. You can't. Why? Mechir Kelev. That exchange is also going to be disqualifying the sheep to be brought as a carbon. You're going to ask me, and I'm not going to have a good answer. But okay, let's just at least I'll put it out there that I don't have a good answer. Why is Mechir Kelev considered a disqualifying factor? The Eslan Zona, I understand, it's intuitive. The Mechir Kelev, I don't understand, but that's fine. Okay, in other words, I understand a lot, and then I'm beyond that, I'm extraordinarily limited. Fine. Anyway, but the point is as follows. These two exchanges are going to be usher. However, there are two other exchanges which are going to be mutter. And that is if I flipped an Esnan Kelev and a Mechir Zona. Okay, so which one? Well, let's do both. We're here. Let's do both. So these exchanges are going to be okay. Now, Esnan Kelev. Now, I know, by the way, we're in the middle of dysfunctional talk, but but it's fine. It just gets more dysfunctional. So over here, what you want to do is the following exchange, and that is that you're going to hire a zona for your dog, and so and now she's going to receive payment rendered for that. Oh. Okay, for a lot of good reasons, we can close the door. But and she's going to right. Can you imagine any one of these young high school girls hearing this discussion? Rachmanis. So you're going to be paying services now so that a zona can be with your dog. And again, by the way, this is an oddity, but that payment that she received, that payment is okay to be brought as a carbon. And I hope you're wondering to yourself, really? That's okay to be brought as a carbon? That's terrible behavior. You're right, it's terrible behavior. But that could be brought as a carbon. Alternatively, that what I just described. I just described Esnan Kelev. Now, Mechir Zona. So Mechir Zona is that, let's say, of one of the shvachos that I own, one of them happens to be a prostitute. And so I sell my Zona. In other words, I have a Shivcha Kanani / Zona, and I sell her. And in exchange, I got an animal for her. So that animal could be brought as a carbon. Okay. Now, again, by the way, I would love to give you good explanations in terms of why these exchanges are okay. I don't have good explanations. But meanwhile, what did we just learn together? That when the zona is having relations with your animal and you're paying for that, so that's not an act of znus. Again, it's an act of bestiality. This is a really subtle point, and I know it's hard to hear. But it's an act of bestiality, but it's not an act of znus. It doesn't give a status of znus. And so she now, who is involved in a terrible act, but she's not a zona through that act. Ah, and going all the way back to our Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that a warning on an Eino Ish, it's talking about a behema. And do you know why a warning on an Eino Ish / behema is not considered a warning? Because it doesn't result in an act. It doesn't give her the status of znus. Ein znus be behema. Okay, I hope all that was clear. That ended the daf today. Wow. that was a lot. Okay, good. Adkan, really, there are two parts of today's daf. The first part of today's daf is whether or not an islandess is eligible to drink mesota. Comes out, Chavava Manav spent a lot of time discussing this very issue, and it's a machlokas. Right? Then, the second half of today's daf, we covered a couple of points in the Braisa, and then we went back to our Mishnah, discussing how there is not going to be kinu and stira by katan, and there's not going to be kinu and stira by an eno ish, and we spent a good part of the Amud Beis today trying to figure out what does that mean, what's the eno ish.